Imagine gathering some of today's most provocative music critics in a club. That's the feel of the Best Music Writing 2010, a collection of over 30 reviews, interviews, think pieces, blog postings, even the odd speech from 2009. It does feel like the hippest people in town talking about both classical and pop music. Ann Powers, chief pop critic for the Los Angeles Times, put the book together with Daphne Carr and explains to the reader what being a music critic feels like.
What will happen right now when I pick up my MP3 player and take it for a walk? And tomorrow when I hear the new noise that will spin me around in a direction I didn't know I could go? Know what I'm talking about? You've been there. You've thought about music this way, felt it, talked it over. You may never put it down on paper or in the data flow, but your music writing, too.
That's Ann Powers reading from her introduction to the Best Music Writing 2010, and she joins us from the NPR studios in Culver City, California. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thanks so much.
Well, and it seems like the overarching theme here is, yes, there is some of, you know, your grandma's music writing, Rolling Stone, but there's a lot more going on. I mean, as you say, people are music writing too.
Absolutely. I believe that many, many people, all of us really, think through music, communicate with each other through music, share it in our most intimate moments and our most public moments. And that's kind of what I was trying to get at.
Well, but that's also, at least for one of the writers, part of the problem. I want to take a look at a speech that Christopher Weingarten gave at the 140 Characters Conference in New York in 2009. It's entitled
Right.
Twitter and the Death of Rock Criticism. And, you know, just give us a sense of his thoughts about the fact that everybody's doing it.
Chris Weingarten is definitely a provocateur. He's a writer. He's a blogger. He is someone who's done this amazing project where he's reviewing thousands and thousands of records via Twitter.
Well, he's doing it because, as he says at the outset, you know, I used to write for the Village Voice and Revolver, but those magazines are disappearing. I'm out of a job.
Venues are drying up. Magazines are going away. And people are firing geeks like me and hiring a bunch of 19-year-old kids that'll blog for concert tickets and a pat on the head. And
the sad reality for anyone who wants to make a middle-class living writing about the arts in general, we know those jobs, many of them have gone away. However, I think Chris's argument bemoaning the bad situation out there for arts journalists is actually, in a strange way, an argument against himself, because he writes incredibly interesting, fun, smart stuff about music and about culture in these forms that are kind of outlaw forms.
Well, let's take a look at some of the other writing that you've gathered. By the way, on the back cover, we read you have a 6-year-old who's a fan of Lady Gaga.
She's hugely into Lady Gaga.
Right? And you got a Lady Gaga article in there. It's by Mary Gateskill. It's her Lady Gaga in Hell. It looks at Lady Gaga's video for Poker Face.
Mary Gateskill's piece on Lady Gaga is interesting in a couple of ways. First of all, it's a Ryberg curated video. It's a site in which different writers present video work. They look at videos or television and analyze it. So they use the multimedia possibilities of the internet to do criticism. And that's what Mary does with this. I really love this piece because initially I didn't necessarily see the complexity of what she was doing, and Mary really taking apart this video from the perspective of someone who's not, you know, a rah-rah champion of pop music at all, it changed my head, and I think, you know, it can do the same for others. At this point, we all see the deeper side of Gaga, I guess, but she got it really early on, and I was very impressed with that.
She quotes William Blake at the end of the review. She talks about Lady Gaga as looking like a dream vision of normal, a hologram of herself, a reanimated corpse. Yes, it persuaded you. But this is where some people, I can hear them saying it, are saying, are you kidding me? It's Lady Gaga.
Well, Gaga herself quotes Rilke in her homemade behind-the-scenes videos that you can see on her website. So I think the artist is definitely with the critic in this endeavor of seeing something more, quote-unquote, high art.
And then there's also just the straight-ahead, you know, good old-fashioned, hang with an artist and make observations reporting. And for that, you have Jason Fine's profile of Merle Haggard that appeared in Rolling Stone.
Jason Fine's piece on Merle Haggard is really the top of the form of what the classic era of music journalism rot. It's made of several elements. Time. He got to spend a lot of time with the artist. He had a lot of time to write the piece. Access. All of those things. And then finally, Jason Fine, a very experienced and skillful writer who really knew his subject, with a wonderful subject, too.
And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee. A place where even squares can have a ball.
Pick out a couple lines for me to illustrate what you're talking about, this kind of writing.
Here's a good example of the kind of scene that you only get if you're able to have the access that Jason Fine had to Merle Haggard. Haggard sits in a beat-up leather swivel chair. Everything he needs is within reach. His Rose acoustic guitar, the phone, remote control, reading glasses, a Bible, bottles of herbs and prescription medications, and his M&M canister, black pipe, and two Bic lighters. In the windowsill is a model train car and a framed fax sent by Keith Richards after he and Haggard performed at a 2004 Willie Nelson birthday bash in L.A. If you ever need an extra hand, Richards scrawled, call on me. See, now that kind of detail, you know, talking about the kind of guitar Merle plays, the M&M canister that holds a potentially illegal substance, and then the note from Keith Richards, which connects this country icon to a rock and roll icon. That's the kind of work that a journalist can do when he has an eye, the way that Jason does, and also when he has the time, you know?
What's fun about the compilation, too, is that you can read that kind of traditional Rolling Stone article, and it'll be smack up against Tavia Nyong'o's, I don't know if I'm saying the name, a piece in Bully Bloggers, which is an online thing, about Adam Lambert.
I just think this piece was genius. I mean, it's profane, it's totally crosses boundaries, but it's also substantive. It reflects Tavia's deep thinking about queer men and women in popular culture and what it means to be Adam Lambert and to flaunt it, you know, on American Idol. The fact that he could do that online is, to me, one of the great things about blogs and about what's happening online.
Right. Ann Powers, the pop music critic for the Los Angeles Times and editor for Best Music Writing 2010, a compilation of terrific writing actually from 2009. Do you feel in general positive about music writing?
I do. I know I have the luxury of having a job. what makes me feel positive about it is that so many people of all ages, of all kinds, are able to find a forum now. And intelligent and whip-smart conversation is happening online just so quickly that it's inventing new forms. We're inventing new forms. I feel like there could be an amazing anthology of nothing but Facebook status reports and their comments. It's just such an alive mind. Call it a hive mind if you must, but it's a very vibrant and often argumentative and exciting hive mind that we're a part of as we think about popular culture.
Ann Powers, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. So hot.